Okay, very good. Glad to see you tonight. Glad to see you again. There's good news and bad news, of course, as usual. The good news is tonight is our last class. Well, you might see it either way. I would say good news. I mean, you can see it as bad news, of course. It depends. But the bad news, of course, is I know you were expecting Chad to be here tonight. And I know he was looking forward to wrapping it up. But it turned out that we talked about it. We both made a decision to go ahead and finish some things that I had. But I'm really grateful for Chad. I know I learned he looks forward to teaching. He likes it. Okay. So that's good. I was in Sherwood, Arkansas was part of the trip where I was, not only Sherwood, but I don't keep up with the Weather Channel or things like that, but I would appreciate it if someone gave me a heads up on the rain up there. So I arrived to Sherwood. You know, if you've been there before, it's hills up and down, okay? So we arrived right up around maybe 3 p.m., and we're really hungry, okay? It's a friend of mine that made the trip. We went to college together, and he's married, and he lives in Killeen. He's related to the military. So we made the trip. We were hungry by 3 p.m. So we arrived at Sherwood, and then our friend, he's going to have us over. He says, well, I have two options for lunch. Just keep in mind, we're so hungry. And he said, what's the first option? He said, well, we're going to go to this buffet. It's cheap, $7 a piece, and you have all you want to eat. And there's chicken, fish, and vegetables, salad bar, whatever. All right, very good. What's the second option? And he said, okay, we'll go to Walmart. We're going to buy a whole chicken. Then we're going to come home. We're going to bake some potatoes. And then we're going to sit down and enjoy. It's going to be very, very cheap. And then I say, which way is the buffet? Let's go as soon as we can. And then going up down the hills, you know, you go down a hill and then there's a flash flood at the end of the road. So, let's go the other way around. And then there's another flash flood. And so it took us about an hour to get to the restaurant, but we finally made it. Okay. And we ate. And I don't need to go into details how many plates we ate or whatever, but we made it. So that was good. So tonight I just want to wrap it up. I don't want to linger too long on 1 Corinthians 7. I just want to move as fast as I can and then maybe 15 minutes and then move into another conclusion. You know, this is our last class. It's been really joyful to study and to refresh about the family. And if I remember, I think it's verse 7-6. And I'm going to move along as quickly as I can. I don't want to linger too much here because I have some other matters concerning general marriage as we wrap it up tonight. Okay? I might take the school of preaching approach, okay, tonight. I mean, we'll read a verse, say a few comments, move along, okay? We might do that tonight, just for tonight. I might stop briefly on verse 15, and then once I finish verse 15, then I'm going to close this screen and then just wrap it up. But you know, it's 1 Corinthians 7:6. But I say this as a concession, not as a commandment. Some might say, is he saying his opinion? No, he's not saying his opinion. These instructions have, he's an apostle. He's instructing about what to do, okay? This is not his personal opinion, although he's not commanding. You know, in the background, he said, separate yourself. It's not a commandment. You don't have to separate. That's your prerogative. You want to separate for a while and to pray and then get back together. But I'm giving you, you have authority to do so, to separate if you want to do so. That's the gist of this verse, okay? All right? And then if you want to look at the screen, the last verse, you know, 1 Corinthians 14:37. If anyone thinks himself to be a prophet or spiritual, let him acknowledge that the things which I write unto you are the commandments of the Lord. So he's writing, and that's right there in Corinthians, okay? So he's writing inspired commandments, okay? Now remember that there's some question being asked, okay, right here in this context. And why were these questions asked in the first place? We think about it because they were not addressed during Jesus' ministry. See, this is the point he's making. The Lord did not speak on this, but I am speaking on it. The Lord did speak on this, so he's filling in those questions that Jesus did not directly address during his ministry. Okay, that's verse 6. Verse 7, for I wish that all men were even as myself, but each one has his own gift from God, one in this manner and another in that manner. Okay, so even as myself, this indicates that he's not married at the time because he's recommending them to remain single. Okay, he's not married. Okay, so single life is appropriate provided the circumstances. Okay, whatever the circumstances were. Okay, that's what he's instructing. Okay, now let's see. Okay, it would be very impossible not to marry. Okay, because Mary will make this present situation even greater. Okay, so it depends on your self-control. You have self-control, well, stay like you are. Just wait, and then you marry later. Okay, if you don't have self-control, then go ahead and get married because of fornication. So you have two options, remain single or get married, depending on your self-control during that time. Okay, so that's where I would say that's easy to understand. Now, notice verse 8. But I say to the unmarried, notice this is a group, the unmarried and to the widows, okay? Two groups, okay? Unmarried and widows. This is my recommendation, or this is my, I'm telling you, it is good for them if they remain even as I am, okay? Remain single or widow. Don't get a marriage vow at the moment. Okay, because family relationships can be much more difficult considering the present upheaval, the present turmoil, or whatever is going happening at the moment. Okay, he's not giving advice to all circumstances throughout all of our lives. That's evident because in 1 Timothy 5:14, widows are recommended, or rather commanded, to go ahead and get married. Okay. So that's the general commandment, 1 Timothy 5:14. So we see that this is not for every time, for every situation, for everybody. Okay? Paul recommends, therefore, I desire that the younger widows marry, bear children, manage their house, give an opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully. Okay? So that's verse 8. Okay? All right, moving along, verse 9. But if they cannot exercise self-control, let them marry. For it is better to marry than to burn with passion. Okay, and I think we understand what he's talking about in the whole verse. Okay, if the unmarried person cannot control himself or herself, well, okay, then it's better for you to get married. Okay, in this situation. All right. Okay, and this to burn. I think I went too quickly, but let's see. It's something that can lead to sin. Okay, the person is burning with lust that can lead to sin, then it's better if you have an option to get married and then stay away from that temptation. Okay, now verse 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 10. Okay, now to the married I command. Now here's another group. He addressed the singles, he addressed the widows. Now let's go to the married. And we're going to understand that he's taking for granted these married are Christians. Because how do I know this? Because he's going to address mixed marriages in a moment. Okay? Now, to the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord, a wife is not to depart from her husband. Okay? We understand this. Now, this word depart is going to be important for us to define it. And I'm going to do that, okay, in just a moment. Okay? But this is, we see here, we're about to see a situation that Christ did not discuss when it comes to mixed marriages, just in a moment. A Christian married to a pagan, okay? An unbeliever married to a Christian. And the common sense is going to tell us that neither of them were Christians. Then one of them converted. Now we have a mixed marriage, all right? Okay, it might not be as much as she was a Christian and she was looking for a pagan husband. It could be. Okay, but it seems more common sense that neither of them were Christians. But anyways, okay, now, verse 1 through 9 dealt with choice. Okay, you have the choice to marry or not to marry. That's your prerogative. But now, in the following verses, he's going to talk, the following question is answered by a command. Do not act in an unlawful way towards your marriage. Okay. So the question could have been, Should they maintain their marriage or should they separate concerning the present situation? What should this marriage do? Should they stay married or should they separate? We have authority to separate ourselves, divorce ourselves in this situation. Okay, he's going to say, now to the married, I command, yet not I, but the Lord, a wife is not to depart from her husband. When do we know the Lord commanded this? Well, back in Matthew 19 and the verses we have studied before. Okay, let me see, I'm going to take my place. And then Mark 10, 11, and 12 also is a parallel passage on this. Okay, now, let's see. Okay, why would they be thinking about separation or even divorce? Well, because of their troubles and persecutions. Okay, and then some thought that it was sinful to be married to a pagan. Okay, but Paul is going to debunk that. Okay, it's not sinful to be married to a pagan or unbeliever. Okay, in this section. Okay, there's no reason for breaking up. There's no reason for divorce in this present distress. You have permission to separate yourself for a little while. There's no reason to separate permanently or to divorce given the present distress. Okay, now that's verse 10. Now notice verse 11. But even if she does depart, let her remain unmarried or reconciled to the husband, and a husband is not to divorce his wife. Okay, again, the word depart. I'm going to take the point, and I'm going to try to prove here. It could be, of course, separation, although he already addressed separation in an earlier verse, but it also can mean a divorce, okay? A legal divorce, okay? But even if she does depart, separates permanently or divorces, let her remain unmarried. Why? Because in Mark 10, 11, and 12, it says that if you divorce just because you want to divorce, and then they remarry, they are in adultery, okay? That's why if they depart or divorce, let them remain unmarried. They have no authority to remarry. Okay? If they divorce because of the present situation, if it wasn't for fornication. Okay? What's the option? To remain unmarried from one side. The other option is to be reconciled. Okay? That's the point here. Okay? Same goes for the wife. Same thing goes for the husband on this situation. Now, okay? If one departs, and I'm putting divorces in this parentheses, his or her mate, then that one cannot marry another one. And, you know, I was trying to understand this word depart, and I'm not going to linger. I'm just going to go real quick. But you see on the screen the second sentence I have there. This word depart here in 1 Corinthians 7, same one used in Matthew 19:6. Okay, whatever God has joined together, let not man separate. The context is Jews putting away their wives or divorcing them. So that's why I'm concluding. And let me show you here. I took this picture from my phone. Well, they're too small. But anyways, on this side, you see the word korizo, which is in Matthew 19. It's maybe rather small. So if you go to 1 Corinthians 7, it's the first same word korizo. One is in that says one is in verb. Both are in verb form. Okay, same word. So that's why I'm saying it could be a divorce, all right? Okay, now moving along. If the marriage is dissolved by any other reason that other than fornication, there's two options, remain unmarried or reconcile to each other, okay? Marriage cannot be dissolved except by death or fornication. That's what the Lord taught us, okay? That's what the Lord indicated. All right, now, verse 12. Now, but to the rest, I, not the Lord, say, if any brother has a wife who does not believe, and she is willing to live with him, let's stay together, okay? Even if she is not a Christian, if she's not a believer, what's the advice given the present situation on a mixed marriage? Just keep it intact. Don't rock the boat, like we say. Just stay like you are. Okay? It's better for you to stay like you are. Okay? Providing the unbeliever is willing to stay. Because we're going to see a case where maybe the unbeliever is not willing to stay. Alright? That's verse 12. Okay? Now he's talking to the rest. Okay? Christians married to non-Christians. Okay? In this verse. Okay? Now, my spouse is not a Christian. Should I divorce him or her? That could be the possible question he was asked. And then the question, no. Marriage is not, and also, well, of course, marriage is not a Christian covenant. That means marriage is universal. Okay? You don't have the right to divorce an unbelieving spouse just because he's not a Christian. Marriage is for everyone. Okay? So, okay, that's the same sentence. Okay, verse 13. I hope I'm not going too fast. Okay, if you have more questions, you can let me know. But I'm going to stop in a moment on verse 15. Okay? And a woman who has a husband who does not believe, if he's willing to live with her, let her not divorce him. Same thing as the previous verse. Okay? No authority to divorce an unbelieving spouse, husband or wife. Okay? Now, verse 14. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified, you know, this word set apart, by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Else were your children unclean, but now they're holy. Okay? In a few words, you know, there's a Christian wife and there's an unbelieving husband. You know, the Christian husband is going to be out there working, you know, who knows how many hours during the day, and then his friends, co-workers, they're going to be mostly pagans. Their conversations are not going to be pure. What he hears is not going to be something that glorifies God. See what I'm saying? They're not going to be honoring God, most likely, in what they do, what they see, etc. He's a pagan. Now he comes home. Now there's a wife who is honoring him. There's a wife who won't speak like his buddies out there speak. There's a wife who's going to honor God, read her Bible. There's a godly wife. Now, that home is set apart. Okay? It sets apart. The Christian, okay, for the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. It can be the other way around. The husband is the one who takes the leadership as far as Christianity is concerned in the home, and that puts apart that home, sets it apart. Okay? That's what it's saying. And then also it implies that the marriage between an unbelieving person and a believer is acknowledged by God by the fact that otherwise your children will be unclean or not recognized by God. Okay? Not legitimate. But they're legitimate because your marriage is legitimate. Then your children are legitimate. Whether your spouse is un-Christian or not Christian, Christian or not, they're legitimate. Okay? In this case. Okay. Let's see. But now they're holy. They're set apart on this situation. They're recognized by God. Both the marriage and the children you have. They're not unrecognized. Alright. Now, moving along here. Okay? I guess I'm speaking my points here. I'm trying to summarize it. Okay? Alright. Let's see. Possible question could have been, can a believer put away his wife in order to be pure or fit to serve God? Or fit for communion with God? You can. You can be fit to serve God even if you're married to an unbeliever, unbelieving husband. Okay? You can still serve God. You're not impure. You're not incapable of serving God. Maybe that could be a possible question. Okay. Now, verse 15. And this is going to be the last verse I'm going to address. It's a long chapter. But there's something I want to address here in this section. It's verse 15. But if the unbelieving depart, let him depart. Okay? And let's also keep in all the context in mind. We already said that this word depart can mean divorce. In fact, a lot of people take it as divorce. Now, but if the unbelieving depart, let him depart. A brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases. But God has called us to peace. Okay? Now notice the phrase in such cases. What's the case? If the unbelieving depart. How many people will fall in that case? Well, I don't know. Maybe not everybody. Maybe a smaller group will fall in this specific case. If the unbelieving spouse departs, that's the special case, then let him depart. A brother or sister is not under bondage. Now, look, notice on the screen, nor under bondage to what? That's the question. Well, some say they're not under bondage to the marriage relationship. But remember, the marriage relationship or him separating, that's the exception, that's the case on that situation. And some believe, as I'm going to try to prove, that is on giving up Christianity. Okay? Now, we're going to try to go a little bit slow here. There's just several options that people believe, but some believe is the marriage relationship. That means you can remarry if your spouse, as soon as your spouse departs, and you're free to remarry. And they call that the Pauline privilege. Okay, Paul gave you an extra privilege. Christ did not give when he was leaving. Okay, but we remember the Lord was really clear when he said, "Except it be for fornication." So we'll be safe if we stay with that. Okay, we'll be safe. We'll be on safe ground. There's no doubt. We're going to be doing the Lord's will. That's the only exception. Now, okay, same thing. Let's see. Okay, now, let me see this. This under bondage, okay, you know, the Greek, just like the English and other languages, has tense, time, and person, okay? And this verb, under bondage, okay, it's a perfect passive indicative, third person plural. Okay? And I'm not going to make it complicated. I'm just going to do something simple. Hopefully I can, if I can get this point across, maybe I can graduate from being an instructor. Okay? I don't want to. And if I don't, then I won't graduate, I guess. Okay? But I'm not going to dig deep into the Greek. I love languages, and I can get way out of hand when it comes to Hebrew or Greek. I like them. I'm not a scholar by any means, but I like it. Okay? And I can go crazy with that. But perfect passive indicative. Keep in mind the word perfect. Okay? It's talking about the past. I'm going to give you an example here. You see that picture? Hopefully that will get your attention. That picture right there. Okay, that's my graduating ring from the Monterey School of Preaching. Now, each student gets a ring, okay, and there's a picture of it right there, okay? Isn't it nice? It's really, really nice. I don't know, it's supposed to be gold. I don't remember how much gold it is. I don't keep up with prices of gold, you know. But it's supposed to be gold, some type of gold, okay? So it's pricey in a way, we know, okay? But here's my point with this ring, okay? Now, if I meet a graduate from the School of Preaching, you know, sometimes the conversation goes as to, what happened to your ring? Where's your ring? Have you seen your ring? And then that's the question, where's your graduation ring? Okay, so my answer. I see you, some of you are reading. It has been pawned, which a lot of times happen. In fact, it happens. My father-in-law has pawned it 3 times, okay? Get money, then rescue it, then get more money, then rescue it, and so on, okay? All right? I'm sorry I threw him under the bus. I shouldn't have, but okay, anyway. So my ass, it has been pawned, okay? Now, what about your ring? What if he says it has not been pawned? What does that mean in English? Can I safely say, if someone say it has not been pawned, can I safely say it has never been pawned? Notice, that's the perfect tense in Greek. It has not been pawned. Okay? It gives room for saying, in other words, has never been pawned. Okay? It has not been pawned. See what I'm saying? I'm not violating any rules here of English by saying the same thing. Okay? That's the perfect tense using an example in English language. Okay? The Greek perfect tense. It's a past action that focuses on the present state. Okay? And the simple past is a past action that focuses on the past action. But the perfect tense is a past action that continues to have effect in the present, and the perfect tense focuses on the present state because of the past action. So we see it has not been pawned. Okay? In other words, has never been pawned. Okay, now let's use this in our example here. Okay, perfect passive indicative, third person singular. I forgot to put the number. Okay, a brother or sister is not under bondage. Okay, bondage is means to enslave. The word doulo. Okay, to enslave. All right, now he has been slave. Okay, present state, he's still a slave. See, past action that carries into the present. Someone has been slave or has been put in jail, unless otherwise stated, still in jail. Okay, he has been slave, present state, what's his present state? If he has been slave, he's still a slave. Okay, now let's do it in the negative here. He has not been slave. What does it mean in the present state? He's free. Okay? Okay, if I ask about my friend from the past, has he been in jail? No, he has not been in jail. He has not been enslaved. So I take it for granted he's free today. Okay? That's the perfect the perfect tense. I hope I pass the test. Okay? I know there's some instructors here, and hopefully we'll see. We'll see what happens. Okay, but in other words, he has never been a slave. Okay, so this bondage or under bondage, this is the way you can translate it. In fact, let's see. I don't think I put a screenshot. Let's see. Okay, let me see. Well, it was going to show up, but I found the Disciples Version Bible translates it this way. Okay, it says, "But if the unbeliever separates, let him separate." Okay, because the brother or sister has never been under bondage in such cases, has not been, and has never been. Just like the ring has not been pound means has never been pound. So you have never been in this situation, but yet you have been married. So maybe it doesn't apply to the marriage relationship because you indeed have been married. But Paul is saying in this situation, in this type of enslavement, you have never been a slave in this type of enslavement or in this type of condition. You have never been. So that excludes the marriage relationship. Okay, I hope that makes sense. All right. If not, think about it, and we'll see. We can talk about it later. But that's what the tense tells us here. In so a Greek one, who is reading his Greek Bible back in the day, he's just going to pass through it. He's going to understand it because he's reading on his own language. Okay, so you know, translation might get lost some meaning in translation. But anyways, that's the point I wanted to make concerning 1 Corinthians 7:15. Okay, now. In other words, yes.
That means whenever a man gets married, he's a slave.
Okay, that's a good point. Okay, and that word slave has never is not applied in the Bible in the marriage context. Okay, good point, Brother Rick. Thank you for making that. Okay, so putting it in easy words, you know, there's a present concern, whatever it is, and then the unbeliever spouse tells his wife, you know, I'm out of here. And because you're a Christian, we're going to be in trouble because you're going against, or whatever you're doing is going to cause us harm. I'm out of here. Now the Christian is put in a bound. Should I follow the leadership of my husband or my wife, Christian or unbelieving wife, or should I stay faithful to the Lord? Because going with him means denying the Lord. That's what Paul's saying. You have never been in such type of bondage. You're free to let him go if all he wants for you is to deny the Lord as you flee from this situation. Okay? Now that's the gist of it. Okay? I don't want to say that I've been extensive. I'm just going an overview. Maybe giving you the desire to study it more. Okay? Hopefully. Okay, that's what I'm saying. I'm taking this Bible school approach because you might think we go deep in every verse, but we don't. They give us that, they sow that desire for us to go out and continue studying as much as we can. Okay, so that was my purpose here. Or I'm gonna switch before it gets later, and I'm gonna just make a few final remarks. Let's see, I don't have a presentation for that, but I have a. When we talk about marriage, and please excuse me for not letting me make comments. I know you like a lot Chad because he allows you to make a lot of comments. I know he. And I like comments, of course, but I'm just trying to wrap it up. Hopefully, I can fit a few matters here. But marriage, we know, is a divine institution. Okay? There wouldn't be any marriage had not God instituted. Okay? It's his idea. He has the manual. Okay? And then, to every statement I'm going to make, there's always something opposite to it that is related to sin. Okay, marriage is of the divine origin. What's against this statement? Of course, evolution. When I say marriage, just evolved down the ages. Okay, or we're proud of evolution. Now, another statement we can make, okay, marriage provides sexual purity or sexual intimacy between a man and a woman. Okay, that's what's designed for. Okay, marriage. Okay, it can be either... physical intimacy, or it can be the place where children can be born. That's the design of marriage. What's against this statement? Of course, fornication. Okay? Violating the purpose of marriage, which is to have this purity in sexuality. Okay? And therefore we learn that sexuality is pure. Okay? In the eyes of God. God created it. It comes from God. Now, marriage is also... And listen to this, is faithfulness to a valiant vow taken, okay, when you become a husband or wife. It's a vow. You are vowing to that person. That's something not to be taken lightly. Either you're saying, I'm going to be with you for the rest of my life. This is a valiant vow, okay, if that word, the way I pronounce it, makes sense to you. Okay? But it's an important vow. What's against this vow or commitment to another person? Of course, cohabitation. I'm not going to make no vow. I'm going to enjoy you. I'm going to get the best, what I think is the best from you. And if things go bad, I'm just out of here. There's no commitment. There's no vow. Okay? Now, also, marriage is a permanent relationship. Okay? And it goes along with the vow. Okay? What's against the permanent relationship? This D word, okay? Divorce, okay? Goes against this permanent relationship, okay? And we see Matthew 19, we read that what God has joined together, let no man put asunder. Okay? It's permanent. Marriage is permanent, okay? Now, what other statements can we make concerning marriage? And this is really good material. Now, another one we can make is marriage is mature in its responsibilities. Okay, it's two mature people. Okay? I don't know what's the youngest that you have seen getting married. Well, of course, I've seen, we've seen movies in India where young girls get married to old persons. Okay? That's pedophile. Okay? That's the sin that's against this statement. Excuse me. Okay? Marriage is mature in its responsibilities. It's two grown men and a grown woman. Okay? Now, also, marriage is monogamous. Now, what's the perversion against marriage being monogamous? Of course, polygamy. Okay? That's the perversion that is against, is being battling against the monogamous nature of marriage. Now, marriage also should be uplifting for both partners. What's the point of getting married if you're going to be stepped onto? What's the point of getting married if you're going to be constant being belittled by your spouse? There's no reason then. Why? You should become a better person. Your desire to succeed in life should be better because you got married. You have your best cheerleader. I don't know if that would be an accurate word, but you have something who's cheering you. The best person who will cheer you should be your spouse. If he's not cheering you, or if you have, I don't see any single people here, but if they're not cheering you, oh yeah, thank you. Then if they're not cheering you, Nate, then you might need to think about it, okay? And you also, yeah. threw him under the bus. But it's for his benefit, okay? It's for his benefit, okay? But that's, I mean, we know, okay. Now, what's the perversion against this? Of course, verbal abuse is like buying coke on the next gas station. It's everywhere. Okay, men get away with so much verbal abuse nowadays that it cannot be measured. Okay, and then not even women dare to call it out. They're afraid. Why? Because verbal abuse can translate then in physical abuse. Okay, so they're scared and so on, and they want to stay there because they think no one else is going to care for them. They're so ugly, no one else is going to care about them. They're not going to be able to find another mate, so they don't want to leave him, even though he's beating him or her or whatever. Okay, and then there's cases where women beat husbands, okay? And that's real. Okay, moving along because of the time. Marriage is also has mutual obligations. Both are obligated, okay? Blaming is a perversion of your obligations. Okay? Just blaming is like stabbing the person you should be loving the most. Okay? It's hurting the person you should be uplifting the most, having given more benefit of the doubt, etc. Okay? Mutual obligation. That means you're accountable. You're not still single. See, your wife did not get married so that you can just take off and don't give account where you are, where you spend the money, what you do with your life. You need to give account now to another person. Okay? That's why she got married to you in the first place, because you're going to give her account. Okay? Sorry for picking on the men. Okay? But anyways, I have everything for everyone, so just wait. I'll get there. Okay? Now, marriage is also heterosexual. Notice, we haven't even mentioned homosexuality yet. And we thought homosexuality is the biggest perversion on marriage. Let's not forget about violence. Lest we get focused too much on homosexuality. Okay? It might be the more with more media. But there's a lot of perversion of marriages. Okay? So it's a heterosexual. And then marriage is something which should be good. Okay? In general. What's the perversion about a good marriage? Well, a bad marriage or just abandonment. Okay? Of the spouse. Anyways, we're remembering in Hebrews 13:4, marriage is honorable. No one should be ashamed of being married. Okay? No one should be ashamed of their spouse. Okay? Marriage is honorable. If someone tells you otherwise, they're definitely going against the word of God. Okay? That's all. Alright? Now, the purposes of marriage, and let's see. There's so much good material, but I'm just gonna finish with this five, maybe 2 or 3 minutes I have, okay? First purpose of marriage is companionship, okay? And I had the opportunity to preach to a big group of students, and I told them, I wish someone would have told me what I'm telling you now when I was in college, that you should look for a friend. Your spouse should be your best friend, okay? He should be your best friend. If you marry only because, oh, she's really good looking, that's not going to be the right way to go, okay? Companionship, okay? Second, marriage, as we learned from Genesis, is to fulfill physical needs, okay? And I didn't put too much emphasis along this quarter on physical needs. I mean, but we understand, as I mentioned, that is marriage the place where God blesses, okay, our intimacy, all right? Okay, a third purpose of marriage, I'm gonna tell you who I'm quoting this from, is Mr. Curtis Cates. Okay, he wrote this long time ago, who knows how many years ago. He looks very young. This is not how I met him, but he has here in his outline is to perpetuate the human race, and we know be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. Okay, I was with my father-in-law earlier today in a full crowded with elementary school students. And he was not bashful to say in front of them. And I don't know, we might get in trouble in a public school, but he say, God bless the marriage, and is the place, and one of the purposes of marriage is to replenish the earth. And then some are going to be black, some are going to be white, some are going to be yellow. God still wants you to reproduce because he's not looking at your color. Okay? This is in the context of the Black History Month. Okay? So, anyways, another fourth reason he quotes here and he mentions is to cultivate morality and industry. That's where our children are going to learn what's good and bad in a marriage. That's where our children are going to learn to be responsible, to say good morning, to shake hands, to say I'm doing well, to brush their teeth, to etc. In marriage, that's the purpose. That's what we're going to learn from. We cannot give that responsibility to the school teacher. We cannot give that responsibility to my mom. You know, she already spent a lot of time raising me and a lot of headaches. Now I'm going to give her my children. No, that's not right. That's not biblical. Grandparents should enjoy grandchildren. They should be grandparents. They should give them chocolate. They should take them to movies, whatever they can afford. They should spoil them. But nowadays, parents spoiled and grandparents correct or raise children. And that's a big perversion in our society. I know I made this point before, but I am very strong about it because I've seen it so much that it makes me so upset. I might be too defensive, and I don't want it. My mom, don't even look at my children. Stay away from them. See what I'm saying? I might be too defensive. But no, I don't need to be that defensive, okay? I need to, okay, you know, we train our younger son, body train, okay? Nancy and I, we take her word. We take her word. She said, well, I'm going to watch for the children. Just leave him here and go. I was on a gospel meeting, so Nancy and I went by ourselves. Oh, he was so good being trained by Nancy and, well, Nancy, mostly. Now we come back from the trip, and he just went back, you know, because mom will spoil him, and that's fine. That's her job to spoil him, okay? It's our job to teach him to potty train. It's not her job. I'm not going to blame her for spoiling him, okay? But anyways, the last purpose of marriage, according to Brother Curtis Gates, is to assist and enable the parents and the children to live the abundant life, you know, to be good Christians, and eventually get to heaven. That's the purpose of marriage. That's why God designed it. Okay, God is wise. He's good to us. Okay, He designed marriage in this way. And it's His idea. I cannot go and in someone else's house and start doing whatever I want. I'm just invited to be part of this marriage relationship that God designed and set for us. So I must follow His instructions, not be too proud to say, you know, God might have made a mistake in how many members of the marriage relationship should be, or God might have made a mistake of the gender of the family. That's not my call. It's not my marriage. I didn't make it up. I didn't invent it. Okay? It's just plain common sense. But you know, when things go wrong, you know, there's doctrine and so on, unsound doctrine. Common sense has gone out the window for a long time. Okay? You lose common sense, you lose your way to understand the Bible. And we need to teach common sense to our children. Okay? So they can read the Bible and say, well, this makes sense. It's just common sense. Okay? Don't put the verses against each other or do crazy things and so on and honor what God says. That's all. That's all what we need to do. Okay? So that's the bell. And I'm sorry, I divided it this way. I hope you can. I really enjoy you being students, and thank you, Chad. And Randy, of course, I don't want to... I know both are great instructors, really appreciate it. But thank you so much for being here this quarter, okay? You have graduated with an A+, all right? I don't know about the teacher, but I know about you.